following interview is an oral history project for History 4.2 under the instruction of Dr. Jackson in the Jackson State University spring semester of 1996. My name is Paula Griffin. I'm interviewing my grandparents, Mr. Dennis Walker, 80 years of age, and Mrs. Sadie Harris Walker, 85 years of age, both of 966 Mill Branch Road, Jackson, Alabama, 36265. They have lived at this residence for over 40 years. Their occupations include farmer, dairy owners, and domestic housewife, among many other positions. The interview is about the lives and times of Mr. and Ms. Walker from the 1920s to 1980s. Okay, Grandpa. We'll ask you some questions about your family. Have the men in your family always farmed?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Have the men in your family always farmed? Your dad and your grandpa, were they farming?
Yes.
Okay. What did they farm? Was it cotton or what?
New flat, new cat corn, sorghum cane, turf cane, hay.
Okay. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
Three brothers, four sisters.
And did any of your other brothers and sisters go into farming?
No. I don't think you
were the only one?
Yeah.
Okay. When you graduated from high school, did you think about going over and getting a higher education, or did you just know you wanted to farm? Or were there other occupations you thought about going into?
Didn't have time to get an education, had to work.
What kind of work did you do?
Drive beer, milk cows. Worked at the steel plant for 4 years.
You worked at the sawmill plant?
Well, yeah, I started. Now, we started when we got married. I worked at the sawmill for $1.50 a day. Then went to the steel plant and worked 7 years and 46 hours.
Okay. When you were growing up, you didn't have cars and all this kind of stuff, did you? You had horseshoes and you didn't have, did you even have a radio? Did you have a radio?
We had a radio about the time we got married, but we didn't have a radio before then.
Okay.
Well, they went in the car.
Okay. Now I'll ask Grandma about the same question. Okay, Grandma, did your daddy and your grandpa and your grandpa fathers in the past, did they farm?
Yes.
What did they farm? That's the same thing.
Well, mostly corn. My daddy raised some cotton and hay for the horses and cows.
Okay, and how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I didn't have any sisters. I have four brothers.
And did any of those go into farming?
No, they didn't.
Okay. When you graduated from high school, was there something that you wanted to do? Did you think about going on and getting a college education, or did you just think about getting married, or what did you want to do?
I was thinking about getting a job. I took a business course, and I had a job lined up in the week I was supposed to go to work. So the panic hit, and I ruined my job, and I ended up doing
nothing. Okay. Well, how did y'all meet each other? Did you just always known each other?
We grew up in the same community.
Which was no town in that. Okay. When did you get married? Did you get married soon after you graduated, or was it this?
I didn't. I waited. Yeah. I graduated in 1928 and got married in 1935.
So, and Grandpa, so you had just gotten out of high school when y'all got married?
Yep. Sure
did. All right. When you got married, did you say that you farmed, or were you doing something else?
Farmed.
You're a farmer. Where did you farm?
First year, we married in November. It was in Sand Mountain, David Wood. Ran into a big house. Two mules, cows, four or five chickens. We raised
had 3 bales of tack and 150 bushels of corn in one part.
And how much money did that bring in?
Corn is about $1 a bushel. I think that's our number of tack. And I still got the tickets in there where I sold my back. Please,
20 cents a pound or something. And Grandma, did you have them in the field? Yes. Well, most people, when they get married today, they have houses or they have apartments and furniture and showers and all that. What did you have to start housekeeping when y'all got married?
We had one bed, two chairs, a table, a cook stove.
Old time flat top cook stove with a little oven on it. That set it up on the lathe. We didn't have any money to buy the stuff. And her daddy, my mother, gave us the hog jaw, the hog meat, and then kind of got a whole little cow with it. And one of Dennis's uncles give us a push of the dry cheese. And we started off without any money. Married today on the A Model Ford. When we started that night to get married, he said to him, said, "I'll let you drive the A Model Ford." He left, get you gas, put it, here's a dollar bill to buy gas for you, and they will ride out. So when he got in the car, it had a little more gas than what I thought. That he thought he was in it. We went to a party and then we decided to go on the preacher and get married. And the preacher married us. Several people standing around. I said, "How much do I owe you?" He held out his hand. "Whatever you want to give me." And I didn't have any change. I gave him a dollar bill. I'm ashamed to ask him to change back. And that's the way we got started.
So you didn't have any money then?
Not a single penny to my name.
So your parents weren't there, your family members, they didn't know you were going to get married, right?
Yeah.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We didn't slip off. Oh, okay. And you got married in
November of 1935? Last day of November, 1935. Okay. Made the crop the next year,
1936. So when the first house you lived in, was it small, or was it big, or was it leased or rented, or what?
First, when we rented the farm on the hays, the man furnished the land, fertilized the seed and the house and the wagon, feed, and we did the work and got half of it.
Okay.
And that was considered a good crop for this people.
Oh, okay.
Corn made good.
Did you go into farming because it was just what everyone did around the area, because that's all
wasn't
you could
that,
do?
Wasn't nothing else to
okay.
do.
That's all there was in Alabama, really,
yeah,
was agriculture.
They lived in depression.
Yeah.
Had those jobs.
Yeah. And the 30s was depression. And it was something to do. We moved back down to the home place in that year, and her daddy let us have some land, and we built a house, started building it. And lived in it before, moved in it before we even had any, all the flooring in it, sides in it. Then finished that up. They were there for a number of years, and then we moved to Texas on down for that.
Okay, before you moved to Texas, though, you had 2 children, right?
Yep, boy and a girl.
Boy and a girl. Okay. Did they help out in the
selling
stuff, or were they too little?
Yeah, they did. And have money every day to go to school.
That was Glenn's first year to go to school, the year we went to state school. And Gail was, how old was he, Gail? 4 years old.
Well, you were talking about the Depression a while ago. People today don't understand how things were in the Depression. I mean, was there no currency whatsoever? Did you barter and trade with people? Or?
There is very little currency.
From long in there, you did whatever you could. couldn't get anything. We even cut wood, cut stove wood, cord wood. We sold it for like $1 a cord. You just done anything that you can get money for. Finally, the steel plant began to open up and work the steel plant. And a steel farm of evening on off days. And she did all the hoeing and feeding and taking care of things.
So how much did you make at the steel plant?
Started 40 cents an hour.
So what did you do?
And that was when I started the steel plant in 1939, was the year, the 40s, when they began to take out Social Security. That's where we got to start at. We bought war bonds and paid in Social Security. We went to Texas, we had enough money to buy a house.
Okay.
What we sold off of that house.
You talked about the war. Did you go to the war?
So, the steel plant kept me out on the job. The job was important to me.
But you knew a lot of people who did go to the war.
Yeah.
Who went and fought.
Yeah.
Do you think that the war helped the economy in Alabama?
Well, something did. The steel plant hired hundreds and hundreds of men long during that time.
What about women? Did women begin to work outside the
plant? I don't know of a woman that worked in the steel plant. At that time, now, they had a few bookkeepers. Most of them were men that kept up with the times and signed the checks. There wasn't very few women there until the end of it. Yeah, that was the 40s, it was the 60s that the women began to go into the field.
Well, a lot of women got their jobs at cotton mills.
Yeah, they were
in the yarn mill. A lot of women worked because their husbands were overseas during the war, and they went out and worked. Made their own living.
Well, did children work with their moms in the cotton mills?
No. Children under age wasn't supposed to work.
There wasn't any bands, you know, places like Hardy, Kmart, Walmart, the dime stores to hire people. Most of that was men. Worked and didn't have very few employees. Grocery stores, of course, the men worked. The women, the man's wife that owned the place, some of them might work. But there wasn't any jobs to be had long in there. In the 40s, it began to pick up some in the 50s, along with men. We used to get on, drive the wagon to a Talon, two horse wagon, and take a gallon to a milk. Bushel of sweet potatoes, a gallon of syrup, a dozen eggs, an old hen or two, chicken. Stop at the kitchen post and a towel. People come around and buy it, you might get $2 or $3 for all that stuff. You go up to George P. Walker's drugstore and stand on the corner, the streetcar would run going from Tallis to Gadsden. The conductor would say, Daddy got on, he'd say, put a nickel in if he's going to sit in your lap. Talking about me now, kid. If you're going to ride on a seat, put a dime in. And that was good to ride all the way to Gadsden and right back to his house for a nickel.
The prices have really changed greatly.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you mentioned the horse and buggy. How long was it before you had a car? You knew family members or people who had cars or motorcycles?
Daddy bought a new rubber tired buggy one time, and that's just like owning a Cadillac today. Then, we was 10, 12 years old, and somewhere along in there. Then, sometime, it must have been in 25 or 6 somewhere, he bought an old solid wheel car with a open side top on it. You had curtains stood up in real cold weather, but it was called a Maxwell car.
Okay.
And that was a real good car. Then the next thing he bought was a 29 T Model Ford.
How much did that cost?
Some man that worked at the steel plant bought it and used it about a couple of years, and he got killed in the plane. Burned, something killed him. His wife couldn't drive, and there wasn't much to mend. Nobody had money to buy him. But Daddy went down there and paid $265 for it. And it was just almost good as new.
What about gas? How much did that cost?
It was from a dime to 12, 13 cents a gallon. And we used to, every once in a while, Daddy would let us have the car and go somewhere. And two or three of us boys would, and some of us put two or three pennies in. If you got a dime, you could get a gallon of gas. So 8 miles go a long way. And it drove up to the store up there. If you got gas in a, and it had a jug, measuring jug up on top of the stand, you pump the gas up to the mark. It said it'd hold 5 gallons. And the man guess it, how much it would hold. And I'd drive up there and he'd be some half some customer in the store. Wait a minute, let me get this dime tank out of the way out here. Go out and put a dime with the gas. He was A.W. Lumpkin. He was a good old man. Bought a lot of the kids. Did a Coca-Cola for a nickel. Great big sack of candy for a nickel.
Well, Grandma, you said you knew somebody who had a motorcycle.
That was his uncle.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But didn't you say Papa would ride it at your dad?
Uh-huh. Dennis's uncle had a motorcycle. And he was good friends to my daddy. And he'd come and get him and ride him around on that motorcycle. That was before we ever bought a car. Our first car was a Chevrolet, a brand new one, and it cost $500. We freighted it in on a freight car to Altoona.
That was the 26 model Chevrolet, wasn't
it? I don't know.
I think it was.
But it had curtains. Instead of having glasses for windows, it had curtains. And we thought we were really something. When we got in that car going down the road, of course, didn't everybody have a car, but everybody wanted to ride, Papa would let them ride.
Then, when I was about, I guess it was about 10, 11 years old, Lim Payne, a next door neighbor, bought him a T-Model Ford, brand new one. And at that time, they worked the road with a grader with a big old caterpillar pulling it. The caterpillar run up the road, and the grader reach out and ditch and pull it. So every time we heard this man crank up his, they graded the road, you know, that day or day or so before, and they sand in, gravel in, ditch and pull it out real good. Every time this fellow would crank up his car, we found out it's going somewhere, we'd run, get out there and ride back down to the house with him. That tickled him. He liked that. So I was running out there one day and got on. He lived about a half a mile from him. And I was riding it back, come over the hill, down a little flat, around a little curve. Just before we got to our place, there was this grader. It pulled out the road. This big man said, "Now, don't you jump off there till I stop." You don't have to stop. I just stepped off the back and I went rolling down that ditch just like a ball. I didn't think about the ground standing still and then moving.
How fast did those cars go?
Oh, it was running about 30, 35 miles an hour, but I guess he must have been going about 10 miles an hour when I stepped off.
Goodness. Well, you said that you went to Texas. Why did you decide to leave Alabama and go to Texas?
When our first baby was born, she began to have asthma, and the doctors told her there wasn't nothing they could do for it. And we had another friend and couple that
that moved to Texas on account of their kid. Her uncle lived out there, and they went out there to visit him, and the kid didn't have any asthma, so they moved out there, and he stopped, and he still lives in Texas and doesn't have any asthma, you know. So we drove out there one time to visit and see them. When you get on the cap rock with the panhandle, she didn't have any asthma. So we went back the third time. We thought, well, if it's going to cure it out of way, we'll just move out there. So we gave up the job and moved out. Worked at the filling station about 10 months, then moved out on a big cattle ranch. Run the cattle ranch for the woman. Raised cattle and wheat. We didn't know what money was, so we moved back.
So you had a lot more money there than you
did in Alabama? Yeah, yeah. It accumulated up enough. We stayed about 6 years. And she developed in the gathering the wheat. There's a lot of dust to it. And she began to have another type of thing. The doctor told her she might ought to get out of that dust that it would cause a TB asthma. So we went to Arizona, back up through Canada, and we didn't find anything there. Both her daddy and mother still living. It was in 49, so we moved back here. She was kind of homesick anyway. Managed for 15 bales of cotton, boll weevil year. That was the year of the boll weevil, 1950. And then we gathered 3 bales of cotton. So I had to do something then. I couldn't keep going.
Now,
that's when we moved down here for a while.
You moved out. Now, between, how did you get down here? You met Mr. Major. You worked at a gas company.
Well, see, I threw a gas on out in the panhandle there. I knew, learned propane gas, how to install it, put it in while we lived out there. But I came back and went down one day to buy some parts from get a bottle of gas and some parts from a cook stove. We won't know who's going to cook it up. And I told him, he said, what do you know about it? And he found out that I knew how to do that. And he got asked to go to work with me. Well, I couldn't because I bought a new tractor and made all this crop and had some cattle. And when we didn't gather any cotton, made pretty good corn, but no cotton. I had to do something. 3 bales of cotton wasn't enough to hardly pay for the fertilizer. He, one day he said, I bought an old farm down in Calhoun County. Then another fellow went havers, and he fell down on the pavement and said, I need some help. I've got a little money. If you go down there, I'll furnish some money if you'll do the work. And that's how we got started here.
Okay, when you got here, it was just a bunch of rocks, right? You couldn't start farming right away, could you?
Well, yeah, there was some good farming land. It's just rocky, dirty soil. But we fertilized it and started working it. I had it.
Yeah, he ate it too. It belonged to him. He gave it back to the Indians. He said, on best or nothing but told the rest of the world to get it.
The county agent. And I will not call the county agent's name, but he's a good friend. He asked him to come out one day and look at it and see sort of how it moved. We hadn't planted all the crops in. He walked around and looked at it a little bit. He's used to these big, level, sandy farms. He looked at it and he said, well, I'll tell you, if it's me, I'd be ashamed to give it back to the Indians. I'd just walk off and leave it. Well, this man that kind of, he had a little money, he said, told me, he said, I'm going to make something out of it now. I'm going to spend some money and show him. Well, the way they talked, there wasn't no way that a fella could live, make his living out here on the farm. We started in 1950 and still here in 96. Raised 3 kids, sent them through school, a little bit of college, 6 grandkids, 7 great grandkids. It's not ended up yet.
Well, when you moved out here, there was no electricity,
no electricity.
Water. And Grandma, you said the house was in pretty rough shape. What did you have to do to fix the house?
Well,
It was in a bad shape because the people who had lived here didn't have any spring doors.
It was only 2 years old, the house.
If the lumber that they built it out of and filled it with had wormholes, cracks in it. And I took one look at it and I thought, I will never move in that house. And so finally, they kept talking to me, and finally I said, well, I'll have to clean it up before I consent to move in. If I clean it up, okay, and if I can't, I won't. So I took a, I got me some hot water, put red devil eye in it, and killed the bed bugs in the cracks in the bedroom.
And what was that other term, what was that other word you call the bed bugs?
Teaches,
yeah.
And then I asked for paint to paint it with, and Mr. Major bought me the paint. Before I painted the walls, though, I looked up and seen the ceiling, and you couldn't put your finger down without getting it on the dust and fly stick. So I had a table, I stood up on that table with a tub full of soapy water and a brush and scrubbed that ceiling down. Then I painted the whole thing. Over and moved in, I was putting it in the... Well, I didn't paint it before I moved in because I had to come down here to work and we just moved in. But that's what we had anyway. And a few years later, we got a ceiling tape and put over the ceiling and put paneling on the walls and put in some new basins and made a very presentable place out of it.
It is.
It certainly doesn't look like it did the day we come down here.
And you didn't have any water electricity. You had to go to the mill branch to get water, didn't you?
But there's a well here, but unfortunately it didn't have much water. We soon drawed it out by the bucket pulls and we dipped it. And then we had a pickup truck with two big barrels in it. We'd go to mill branch and dip up water and put in them barrels and bring it to the house to use. And my daddy was in the hospital with a milk in about 16 cows. And we overslept one morning and called me and said to bring my mother over there. They didn't expect my daddy to be up. So I told Dennis to take her, and I stayed here and milked the cows and went and filled them barrels up by the time I got to the house. There was frozen water all over them barrels. All that I had spilled, it just froze solid. It was so cold. And I milked all 16 of them cows and got the milk ready for the milkman to pick it up.
And you milked by hand, didn't you?
Yeah, by hand.
Because you didn't have electricity. And then you just had a third baby, right? Third child. So you had three children that were...
Yeah, we had three children, but they were in school.
Okay.
And we didn't keep them out for anything.
I couldn't understand why, when we lived in Texas, we lived on the range of 1,600 acres of it. And you could see from one side to the other, you could see 8 miles from town how level it was and how pretty it was. We had good pickups, good tractors, everything.
Had a modern house, water in it.
Water, gas, electricity, and everything in it. And all that paid for. We had a good job, good place. But the woman decided she was going to sell out. She got old and she wanted to sell the moon. So that's whenever she began to have the hay fever. It's the bad when we left there. Came down here in this house, you heard her describe it.
Mm-hmm.
Why did we come down here? We still don't know. But Mr. Major died in 1963. And we either had to buy it all or none. They wouldn't straight up sell it. Finally, they sold it to us. And now then, we're living here, and all the grandkids and kids on the farm here and accumulated up to 800 acres. So I reckon it seems like home today. And the girl that's describing this over here was born and raised out here, and I think she'd be looking home.
Yes, I do. Let's see. Okay, what crops did you raise here in Webster Chapel? Did you raise cotton?
When we first moved in here the first year, he had a man in a movie theater that they started with cotton. And he plowed most of it. He was a young boy. He was just in his early 20s. Come out here, Mr. Major come out one evening, sat in front of the porch with his feet propped up. He said, "What in the world's the matter with you? Why aren't you plowing that cotton out here?" He said, "I just can't stand that. If I can't plow all day, it's just too hard to work to plow. If you get me a tractor, I'll plow." So in a few days he come back out here and the tractor was marred down in the mud. It come rain and marred down, he didn't have to get it out. So when we started the first couple of years, we began to clean up the edge of the fields, and we cleared some up on the top of the mountain back here. We planted a pretty big cotton crop, made fair off of it. But it was hard work, you know, flying it with tractors. There was a lot of small rocks. We began to grow corn, and then county agent come out one day and said, "Why don't we start milking some cows by hand? They got get milk cans now and milk the cows and put it in a water cooler and keep it in the truck and run every other day or every Thursday and pick it up." We lived a mile off of the main road, so we carried that milk over and met them until we got up above 4 cans of milk. When we got 4 cans of more, we finally got picking up that 10 cans of milk every Thursday. So we drive over here and get it. So finally, we decided, Mr. Major said, find a theory. You have to buy in and get a milk basin order to sell milk to the plants. He said, "If you find somebody with a good herd for sale, well, we'll just try to buy it. Start milking." We didn't even have a barn to milk in. You had to have a grade A barn then. We were milking grade B milk to see by hand. Grade A has to come in a special barn. Well, we found a man about 8 miles from us over here, come up for sale, had 26 cows. And we went to see him. He said, "Yeah, I'll sell you the cows and sell you the milk base." Well, we didn't have a barn built. He was wanting out of it. Finally, he said, "Well, if you'll come and milk these cows, help me milk this. And at times I'm milking the way I've been milking them, I'll help you. And then you get your barn built." He said, "All right." Agreed on the price. He said, "Be here in the morning at 1:30. Well, that gave us, you went over at 1:30, that gave you, you get back home by daylight, you'd work on the barn till 3:30 that evening, go back and milk the cow. Then get back up the next morning at 1:30 to start milking." We found out that we didn't get much sleep that way. We got the barn built, whatever, moved cows over here and unloaded them. I said, "Old gals, y'all go on and lay down out there and have a good time, because Wiggy and I are going to milk you at about 5:30 in the morning." And we went from about 8,000 pounds per cow to about 16. We doubled the milk production. I don't remember just how many pounds it was, but anyway, we doubled the milk production on the cow, the cub, and horses. And we, whenever we sold them, we still milked them every morning around 6 o'clock. Get through at night about 6 o'clock. And that's where we made a living and send us to school. In the meantime, we bought bigger tractors where we could milk cows and get through cleaning up everything by somewhere around 9 o'clock and get into the field with the bigger tractors. We finally got 3 tractors. best we had was to, you know, plant a lot of crops. So we spread out that way and bought bigger tractors. Finally, the rains dried up and we bought an irrigation system, and that really helped us because it was worse. And it just, and then we had a lot of land with timber on it. And that's really been that's some of the best money we've ever spent buying the land, planting pine trees on it, letting the trees grow up and cut it off the timber. That we're still cut land here now, cut timber, cut hardwood off, cleaning it off. We cut 11 loads of hardwood logs last week, 10 loads the week before, and the week before that rain, just old crooked, rotten-hearted oak logs, all in big demand for them.
A while ago, you were talking about milking. You went from milking by hand to using a milker, but you had to have electricity.
We first started milking by hand. Finally, we got electricity in here.
Through a co-op, right?
Yeah. Cherokee. Cool. That was 1953 we started milking by hand. Then in 1957 we bought this herd and built a barn. Built 1957 through 1992.
Did you have to buy into the electric co-op? How did that work?
We bought the man's base that you could sell so many pounds of milk to the dairy every month on the base that he had. Well, we caught two or three sales and we bought a few more pounds of base through going to sales, buying somebody that was selling out. And then as you could build your base up, but it'd take a year at a time. If you're milking this year, you wouldn't get to use that base until next year. You'd get more milk production that way. So we build up the milk base that way.
And by now, the milk truck was coming here and picking up the milk out of the tank.
Always come here and milked up, picked up grade A milk.
Now, how big was the tank? How much would it hold?
We started out with 250 gallon tank. How big was that big tank up there? Wasn't it 1,000 gallons? I think the last one was 1,000 gallon tank. We started 250 and we added one to it. Then finally we had to get rid of a little and add the bigger one, then we just got one bigger than brand new tank.
And how many cows could you milk at a time?
We run 5 cows in at a time milk.
And that was every morning and every night?
Yeah.
How many cows, what's the largest number of cows you ever had at one time?
We milked 105 cows at one time after a few years.
And you used corn and silage to feed them?
We built two big silos, the first in 1967. The next one in 72 or something like that. And they were two silos at 20 feet across and 70 feet high. I believe it. I done forgot, but I seen me like it was 1,600 ton silos. And we rent land close by and cut the corn and put them in and combine enough corn to feed them, grind it up, and what we couldn't grow corn was back.
And did you just buy feed, or did you use citrus pulp, or what did you use?
When the citrus pulp first come out, we bought a new Ford truck, and we, what year did you move to Florida, Katie? All right, when they went down there, that was a good excuse to get to go see them. And we would take this truck and go down there and get a load of citrus pulp. First, we had to get it in bags. We'd bring all back, we could bring on a ton and a half truck across the skater. We'd feed that. When we run out, we'd go back down there and spend the night with Gail and Doris. Paula didn't live with them, which is in Florida. So we'd spend the night with them, go down on, like on the weekend, and get load on Friday and stay Saturday and Sunday and come back Monday.
Okay, you were talking about electricity water. You didn't have paved roads here in Florida.
No paved roads until about the 12, the milk truck came up here one day. We started in 57. The milk truck came up here and they put a bridge across the mill branch down here where the county gets water that goes all over the whole northern part of the county. And they put the bridge in. You used to have to go through the water and they put the bridge in, and the boy didn't have a kitchen in his milk tank, his bobtail truck. When he went around the curve where that milk started sloshing, he ran off in the mill branch out into some bushes across the mill branch. But it wasn't long after that till they paved the road somewhere. Must have been in the 60s they paved the road.
Okay.
We had a real good road for the log truck to start driving over in the big truck. We got it beat up.
Well, during all this time, since you're doing better and you've got the dairy, think your economic situation's better, wasn't it? You're making more money, especially.
Well, if we'd stayed at home and hadn't went nowhere and hadn't spent it, we'd have some money.
But, Grandma, you sewed all your clothes by hand, and you tanned and stuff like that, so you didn't have store-bought clothes.
That's right. Biggest part of the clothes I had, I made myself, and biggest part of the clothes is the girls wore to school, I made them.
And you helped Grandpa in the fields. You go to the fields and milk, wouldn't you?
I sure did.
Ask her what she's doing right now while we're taking this.
What are you doing?
Crocheting.
Grandbabies. Great-grandchildren. while she's talking about doing this. She's getting paid for that, and she ain't... Can't be still.
You got to
do that.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of pay for it. I get my neck hooked every time I see
them. Well, did you have to drive tractors too? Did you work?
Oh, yeah. I drove everything. My tractor to a truck. I hauled off corn, cotton seeds, wheat, whatever had to be hauled. And I've done a little bit of everything.
And the kids, they milk too, didn't they?
Yeah. They just run out of fertilizer. I took co-op and give them those fertilizer for them.
Talking about the tractor now, we had a rat huge, big diesel tractor. Everything on it works. Electric starters and switches, everything. But one day, between milk and farming, we cut a lot of logs on it. So I was getting a load of logs off, and she came up to help tear the tractor up to load it with. And when we got the logs loaded, we were up on top of this hill on the hay field. And it's really steep going down the side. But she was going to bring the tractor back to the house, and she drove it a lot of time. But when she started down the hill, she had it in gear. And the chief pushed her foot on the clutch and pushed the throttle lever up, and that killed the engine. And that's why you killed it. You push it by the notch, cutting it off, and it killed the engine. When the engine's dead, you don't have any brakes or any power steering, anything. But, and that tractor started going down the side of the hill, and you talk about a Western radio. Rodeo now, I say, that tractor just bounced and flopped, and she just holding up to it. And me hollering at her and directed. I hollered and told her to pull the throttle down, put it, and let the clutch out. It got nearly down to the bottom of the hill, and it was really running, going down across the hay field.
Well,
and she let the clutch out and cranked, and she stopped it before it got on down the woods.
Well, you were talking about lumber harvest a while ago. You said you got out of the dairy in 92. Did you get out because you wanted to, or because the milk prices went down?
Well,
milk quit.
See, she quit milking, and when she went to have her open heart surgery, she couldn't milk anymore. And the hospital bills was an enormous amount. So, in order to get insurance that would cover us, I was old enough to draw my Social Security. insurance. We had one insurance policy that covered just going to the hospital. But it wouldn't cover the doctor, you know, doctor bills, things like this. If you join up and draw Social Security, you get Medicare and can draw Social Security. Well, when I joined up, then at the age it was, they wouldn't let me live. I had to get the dairy out of my name. So we decided we'd rather see the country and travel some than that. And after she got out of the hospital with a heart operation, we started traveling.
You've been to I guess you've been to every state except Alaska. I mean, Hawaii, you haven't.
Yeah, every one but Hawaii.
And you've been to Canada several times.
Been 8 times, 9 times up to Canada.
Well, you said that Glenn, your son, took over the dairy.
Yeah. All right. The low 70s, it was hard to sell enough milk to make ends meet. It was just no price there could. Then it began to grow and come on up in the later part of the 80s. The milk price was good, but it didn't go up according to the feed price. You buy a load of feed and it was about twice as high as it was back when the milk was, you know, the milk started going up. The milk did go up to match the feed cost. You couldn't get any labor. Labor was so high. And anybody that you could trust with the barn, milk cows, they had something of their own. They were still better. And it just could not make the ends meet. Kids had been in it so long, and they were getting married and going to each other's way. Finally, we decided to set it out. And we've been in the timber business now. And the farm, whenever we buy all the timber we can get from our neighbors that won't sell, folks buy and cut it and leave ours standing. And whenever we can't buy theirs or it's raining wet, can't get theirs, we can get ours off of this region. And that's what we've been doing ever since we've been down.
But even before you got out of the dairy business, you had a sawmill you ran too, that you kind of loaned with your lumber.
Yeah, we had the big circle saw then. Take 5 men to run in to run it properly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, in the lumber business, you say, well, it's doing well. It right now compared to dairy business, it's a lot better.
Well, prices of lumber have just gone down now. Pretty bad. It's been, they got to where they're cutting us off some now. We'll take logs for some time for 3 or 4 days. The longest period's been 2 weeks. This, what was that last hurricane we had? Opal came in and destroyed so much timber. Huge, big trees that normally wouldn't be cut. They had to cut them, bring them in. And that's what people have been cutting ever since. Well, from the tornado that came in here a few years ago in the snow, this March would be 3 years of snow coming, and 2 years ago the tornado came. And it destroyed a lot of timber. Now this oak will come in and it's destroyed more timber than all the other together. It's all over the whole country, and that's why timber's such a low price. That cookies to work it out, they expect the timber to go back up.
Well, if you were starting out again, would you go back, would you go into farming if you knew then what you know now?
I think we would, because we've done sort of how we wanted to whenever we could make ends meet. We started in it. Now, you had to stay here and work, and you can't buy what everybody else is buying. You have to do about a lot of things in order to do that. Can't go to town and eat supper 3 or 4 nights a week. But, you got to save some. But we finally got a hold of this motorhome on account of her health, not letting her be here by herself. And we've traveled on every state, Canada, Alaska. Still going again. We're probably going to leave before this thing gets out of this paper folder.
Well, looking back over the years and the accomplishments you've made and the recognition and the awards that you've gotten, What do you think? Was it just hard work, or do you think that the economy was good? Or if someone were to ask you, how did you make it, what would you tell them?
Well, I married a good girl, and she pinned me down and saved, helped me make it, helped me save.
Okay.
And I had kids come along, did the same thing. I believe that the depression, people who fell through the depression, I believe get along a lot better than the people who didn't, because we remember what it was like. And you're not going to go out and spend the last dime you've got for something you don't really need, but just want it. You think about, well, there might come another time when you would need that money, and it's better to save a little bit along as you go.
So people today don't appreciate what they have, then, do they?
Well, when we grew up now, we didn't have things like people did. I went to high school. One person owned the store. Their kids had pretty well what was another. There was about three stores. Nelson's, the Hopper, Lumpkin's, they all had stores. And their kids had money. This man had one boy and two girls, and he would sneak around and go in the store. Somebody'd give him a dime, or he'd get one out of the cash register somewhere. And his sister would go to school, they couldn't get it. And when he got to school, they began searching and taking his money. And whenever they couldn't find it, he'd go down to Mr. Nelson's store at Waller Grove and get the candy and come back and give it to everybody, and he's real popular. So one morning I get on the school bus and I walk by him, he sticks his hand out of his pocket and drops a dime. When they get to school, with his sister and two or three more girls, they get him down and search him, and they can't find the dime. After so with, he comes around, that's, gets his dime, and he goes down. Well, by the first, he gets some candy out of it. He comes up, and that happened two or three times. But from that time now, see, in the 30s was the lowest point that this country has seen, I think, now it's 40. Nothing since then has been that low. From that day, it started coming up. People begin to get jobs, working, and things has changed all up to now. And I consider this some of the best times I've ever seen. Everybody's got jobs, they got new cars, they got money, and the women folks is working with good, high-paying jobs. And see, by us being raised in that, we know what it was. And if it went back now, I don't know what people would do. And you can't live today without some kind of income. Back then, you could go out and grow your own corn and garden and cow, kill a hog, hang it up, and you'd have something to eat. Today, nobody knows how to keep it. Everybody's got deep freezes, but that costs a lot of money to run them and keep them. You don't raise it, you buy what you put in.
Okay, we've talked about the 20s and the 30s and 40s and the 50s and 60s, so we've talked about the Depression and World War II and Korea and the Vietnam War. In the 60s, though, the South was the so-called hot spot because of civil rights. A lot of people thought just because you lived in the South, you were racist or whatever. Were the places where y'all grew up, were there that many black people that lived there?
No, not on ours. Now, we hired, we raised some cotton. The people that had a truck or something, they'd go to town and get a truck load up and bring them out. Now, I've never had no problem with black people.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we had a man out here one time cleaning out our well, and he made his living cleaning out wells. And when the dinner time come, I told him, let's eat dinner. He had his own dinner. He was muddy and nasty as he could be. I said, well, let's go in the house and eat dinner. Said, oh, no. I said, man, you wash them feet off there, and let's go in. So, well, he had to get the mud off his shoes, his muddy and everything. Was, had an old extra pair of breeches on that he goes in the well with. He'd come in and sit down at the table. whenever he left, he shook hands with me and said, "I sure do appreciate that." So that makes me feel good that very few people ever ask me in their house. And that's the first table I put my feet under and have to eat off of the table. So I've never had no problem with him. I don't think we would with anybody if they'd have treated him right.
When I was growing up, my daddy did a lot of truck farming. He'd take vegetables and milk, butter and eggs down and peddle it out. And he always, you know, the black people were his customers. And he was always nice to them, and they were always nice to him. And I can remember one time at church, we had a singing on Sunday night. And Papa took his car and went and brought a whole carload of black people out there. They were singers. And they entertained us at the church that night, in the white people's church. And nobody was any different towards them than they was the white people. I don't know. I never even thought about, you know, being ugly to a black person.